So we'll move to question time, and I have Senator Kovacic.
Thank you. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. How much extra spending has the Albanese government committed to in the past week?
Thank you, Senator Kovacic. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator for the question. All of those details will be released in the budget in the normal way, as people would expect. And the spending that we have supported, including paying super on PPL, and along with our other cost of living measures, are about supporting the community, easing cost of living pressures where we can, but continuing to repair the budget. And I would remind those opposite that we were the first government in 15 years to deliver a surplus, not to print the mugs that said that said you were back in black, but actually deliver the surplus. We have removed waste from the budget. We have sought savings and delivered those savings. And we have found room for important priorities like super on paid parental leave, because parents who take time out of the workforce, we believe it is an investment, not a welfare measure, as some opposite have called it. We believe these investments are important. We believe they're investments not only in achieving gender equality, but they're good for the economy. And all of our spending, all of the spending that we agree to, is measured against our fiscal priorities and our fiscal plan. And we will continue to do that. We're in the thick of the budget session now. We are going through all of those decisions. We're fixing up terminating measures and hidden black holes that we inherited from you when you were in government, because you didn't budget with a true picture of the state of the budget. So we'll continue to do all that work. We'll continue to repair the budget, to lower the debt burden we inherited, and to make room for important spending priorities that alleviate the cost of living pressures on Australians.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Kovacic, first supplementary.
Minister, is it true that the Albanese Labor government made $6.75 billion in new spending commitments in just 1 week?
Thank you, Senator Kovacic. Minister.
Thank you. And I take the supplementary. There's one thing I don't do, and that is accept the numbers that those opposites spout. And I have seen them. I have
order,
seen them.
Order.
I have seen how you've added up in your big spend,
order,
in your spending.
Order.
Some of the things that you have costed, that you accuse us of, are important increases in the pension, for example, estimates variations, where because of inflation we see increases in payments. Now, you count that and say that it's wasteful spending. We have invested in Indigenous housing. Tick, yes, because we believe we need to fill the gap that was created after a decade of inaction to make sure that we are providing housing options for people in the Northern Territory. Yes. Are we backing the critical minerals industry? Yes. Tick, we are backing them. Are we investing in the future generations of this country through super on PPL? Yes, we are, and all will be released in the budget.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Kovacic, second supplementary.
How does the Albanese Labor government's latest spender-bender, which comes on top of $209 billion of new spending since being elected, line up with the Treasurer's promises that the next budget will demonstrate that we will be more responsible and demonstrate more restraint, and that there will be not be any big cash splashes in the budget? Simple as that.
Thank you, Senator Kovacic. Minister Gallagher.
For the supplementary. So what I take from that is that you do not support estimates variations to pensions and payments. If you use that figure, Senator, that is what you are saying. If you don't support Indigenous housing, that's what I hear from that, that you don't support super on PPL, and that you're not backing in the critical minerals industry. Is that what you're saying? Because that is the implication from the question that you ask. Now, we will do, and I know it kills you, I know it kills you that we delivered the surplus. I know it kills you that we are more fiscally responsible, that we are managing the economy better. I know all of that really irritates you, but the reality is We are sticking to the fiscal plan that we outlined when we got elected. We are making responsible decisions. We're investing where we can. We're making savings where we can. And we're reducing our debt burden. Yeah. And that is what any responsible government would do.
Good stuff.
Thank you. Before I come to you, Senator Walsh, I'll draw to the attention of honourable senators the presence in the gallery of a delegation from the Parliament of Kiribati. It's the Public Accounts Committee, led by the Chair, the Honourable Tower Nay Marie. And on behalf of all senators, I wish you a warm welcome to Australia and in particular to the Senate. Senator Walsh.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister for Finance and Minister for Women. Taking time out of paid work to care for children is a normal part of working life for parents. We know that it is women who overwhelmingly pay a motherhood penalty as a consequence of this time out of the workforce. This penalty means that women earn less over their working life and as a result retire with less superannuation. How will the Albanese government's plan to pay super on government paid parental leave make a difference to women and their economic security?
Thank you, Senator Walsh. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, President, and I thank Senator Walsh for the question, and again for everyone on this side of the chamber, including Senator Walsh, for their advocacy around paying super on PPL.
Yeah,
it's been
yeah.
Part of Labor's party policy, and we are so pleased that we have got the budget into a shape now where we can afford this important investment. We know that one third of the gender pay gap can be attributed to time spent caring for family and interruptions in full-time employment. Women and with children face an average 55% drop in earnings in their first 5 years of parenthood, while fathers' incomes don't change at all. Last week, we announced the Working for Women, a strategy for gender equality. And as part of that and our commitment to driving gender equality in this country, we did make the announcement that parents accessing Commonwealth paid parental leave will get an equivalent 12% superannuation guarantee payment on top of their paid parental leave payment from the 1st of July 2025. We don't see this payment as a welfare measure, as some of those opposite have painted this. We see it as a workplace entitlement. And we know that the gender super gap that exists is between 22% to 32%. It has been an anomaly, I think, that the government PPL hasn't included super on it. So it means women, and it is predominantly women, who are using that payment, although that may change with some of the changes that we've been put in place and passed by the Senate this morning, we'll see women paying another financial penalty for taking time out. So the announcement was two things. One, because we needed to, it was the right thing to do to fix up that anomaly, but also we wanted to take a strong, or send a strong message that we value the caring role that parents play, and we wanted that to be reflected in the decision that we took on super on PPL.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Walsh, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Under the Albanese Labor government, the gender pay gap is now at 12%, the lowest level in Australia's history. I understand that the government is taking further measures to ensure that Australian women can achieve economic security throughout their lives. How else is the Albanese government taking action to improve women's economic equality and support cost of living relief for women?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much and for the question, Senator Walsh. This has been a clear priority for the government since being elected, and it, going back to my earlier answer to the first question of the day, it's the reason that we've been getting the budget in better shape. Repairing it, removing waste, driving savings is so that we can provide the room for these important decisions that drive gender equality, so super on PPL, but obviously we've seen a number of other measures where we have increased investment, might be on single parenting payment. Again, 90% of single parents are women. Our investments in childcare and early education and care, our investment in wages for highly feminised industries like aged care. It's all part of our focus on driving a better outcome for women or working for women in this country. It will remain a priority for this government as we continue to work through that national strategy.
Senator Walsh, second supplementary.
Thank you. Minister, you've made it clear during your time as Minister for Women that listening to the views of women is an essential part of the policy process, including in developing the Albanese government's gender equality strategy, Working for Women. Why is it important to listen to women? And what difference does it make having women at decision-making tables?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, Senator Walsh. And I'm very proud, along with all of my colleagues here and in the other place, to be a member of the first federal government that has a majority of members who are women.
Yeah.
That, of course, hasn't happened by accident. And we know that there are still some political parties that struggle with the role they want women to play in their political party. But we've made a very clear decision to increase the number of women, and it's paid off. We have talented women that make up 50% of the Labor government, and it does matter, and it does change decision making, and it means that issues like driving gender equality are a real priority. And we have consulted and we have listened to women right around the country in terms of finalising our strategy. We had roundtables, we had surveys, we took feedback from thousands of women and women's organisations to make sure that we got this strategy right, and I look forward to implementing it.
Thank you, Minister. Just before I come to you, Senator Chandler, I'll welcome a second delegation. So I'd like to draw to the attention of honourable senators the presence in the gallery of the Australian Political Exchange Council's 15th delegation from the Philippines, led by the honourable Jenny Rosali Mendez. On behalf of all senators, I wish you a warm welcome to Australia and, in particular, the Senate. Senator Chandler.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Senator Farrell. In January this year, UNRWA sacked multiple staff members for alleged involvement in the horrific October 7 terrorist attacks, and funding for UNRWA was paused on the basis that alleged involvement by its staff in those attacks must be investigated. I note that these investigations continue and have not yet concluded. Will the government release the advice it received, which underpinned its decision to reinstate funding to UNRWA ahead of the conclusion of investigations? And can the minister outline what verifiable undertakings have been secured to guarantee Australian taxpayer dollars are reaching those in genuine need and are in no way accessed by extremists or by terrorists?
Thank you, Senator Chandler. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and I thank the senator for her question, and also welcome the Filipinos here today. Kumusta.
Oh, look at him now.
Yeah. But to answer your question, that's the extent of my Filipino after 40 years of marriage. Sorry about that. We want to ensure that all aid that we provide as a government, Senator, to any organisation in any country gets to the people that it's intended to do, and we are strongly of the belief that that is the case with these contributions. As you rightly say, we did suspend the forwarding of aid to UNRWA when issues were raised about particularly the people who were working in that organisation. Australia has contributed, I think it's a total of $52.5 million in humanitarian assistance in the Gaza since this terrible crisis.
Minister Farrell, Senator Chandler, wait until you're called. Senator Chandler.
Thank you, President. Point of order, and the point of order is on relevance. I asked about the whether the government would release the advice did relied upon to reinstate funding to UNRWA, and I asked the minister to outline what undertakings had been taken before the funding was re-released. I don't think the minister's gone anywhere near either of those questions.
Thank you, Senator Chandler. There was an awful lot in your question, and I have been listening very carefully to the minister, and the minister is being relevant to your question. Minister, please continue.
Thank you, Chair. The allegations against UNRWA were obviously serious, they were grave, and they warranted an immediate and appropriate response. And as you may have seen, Senator, a number of countries, including Australia, have now taken the decision to resume humanitarian contributions in Gaza.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Chander, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Speaking of other countries, did the Minister or other government representatives consult with the United States prior to announcing the resumption of funding to UNRWA?
Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. Senator, we make our own decisions about who we make humanitarian grants to. We obviously have a very close relationship with the United States, but we also have close relations with Canada, New Zealand, and a range of other countries, including the European Union, and all of those other countries. So,
order.
Well, I haven't given up on the EU Free Trade Agreement, Senator Birmingham. Yep. So we
order.
No, we haven't given up on that. But we make our own decisions about who we give humanitarian aid to, as I mentioned before.
Thank you, Minister Farrell. The time for answering has expired. Senator Chandler, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, why is the Albanese Labor government acting in opposition to the United States, our most trusted international partner, who await the outcomes of the investigation into UNRWA, and in the interim is pursuing alternate means of delivering more humanitarian assistance?
Thank you, Senator Chandler. Minister Farrell.
Well, I take issue with your original or your first statement there. I'm not sure that the United States is our most trusted ally. I would have said New Zealand in the whole history of time. The whole history of time is our... Yes, yeah. Now, I would say...
Order.
I would have said our closest international ally is New Zealand.
And, Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. I'm going to wait for order before calling the minister again. Minister Farrell.
But we are very close to the United States. I freely concede that, and we'll continue to work closely with the United States on a range of international issues.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Faruqi.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing Minister Wong. Under intense pressure from the community and the Greens, the Labor government has been forced to reverse its disgraceful suspension of UNRWA funding. It is clear funding was suspended by Minister Wong without any evidence and compounded starvation and suffering for Palestinians. The Human Rights Watch, Oxfam and others have said Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. At least 23 children in northern Gaza have died from malnutrition and dehydration.
Senator Faruqi, I'm sorry, please resume your seat. Senator Faruqi has the absolute right to ask her question in silence from both sides of the chamber. Senator Faruqi.
Thank you, President. The Human Rights Watch, Oxfam and others have said that Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. At least 23 children in northern Gaza have died from malnutrition and dehydration in recent weeks, adding to over 13,000 already killed by Israel. In a world where Palestinians' lives mattered to the Labour Party, it would be an absolute political scandal for
Senator
a sitting
Faruqi,
minister.
The time for answering has expired.
Well, they were shouting...
Minister Farrell. Senator Faruqi, resume your seat. Senator Faruqi, your question was extremely long And regardless of interjections, I doubt you would have got to the end of it. You are not in a debate with me. I've asked you to resume your seat and not continue with such disorderly conduct as to keep reading the question. I've called the minister, Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Faruqi for her question. Well, of course the Labor Party doesn't want to see anybody starving. That's the case in respect of the Gaza, and that is why Australia has committed $52.5 million in humanitarian aid, and that's why Australia has resumed its contribution towards UNRWA and will continue to provide humanitarian assistance where it's needed in Gaza. The circumstances in Gaza are terrible. We all know that, the loss of life. You want to hear the answer? You want to hear the answer? Well, we stopped because there was good reason to. There was good reason.
Order.
We stopped.
Order.
We stopped because Order. There was good reason to make a decision to review the contribution based on evidence that had been provided. And, with respect, Senator Kim, there was evidence that resulted in this government making the sensible decision to review. But we have resumed the contribution. So I do find it very difficult to understand the point that you're making, Senator Faruqi, when we have restarted the contribution. And as I said, that contribution totals $52.5 million in humanitarian aid to the Gaza.
Thank you, Minister Farrell. Senator Faruqi, first supplementary.
The ICJ ordered Israel to take immediate steps to allow aid in, and the UN has repeatedly asked the world to act and for Israel to allow aid into all parts of Gaza. Minister Wong has said that she is imploring Israel to allow more aid. Beyond mere weak words, Minister, what actions has the Labour government taken to force the Israeli government to stop blocking aid? And will you admit your gross mistake in suspending UNRWA funding and apologise for it at least?
Thank you, Senator Faruqi. Minister Farrell.
Senator Faruqi, I won't apologise to it. We took the appropriate action in the circumstances to review our humanitarian contribution to UNRWA based on the evidence that had been provided. We have now resumed those payments, and we've done that, as I said before, with a range of other countries, including New Zealand, Canada, and the European Union. We have made the right decisions all the way along the line here, Senator Faruqi. You may not like it, but all of those decisions have been made by the government, have been the correct correct decisions, and we will continue to make the correct decisions, and that includes seeking discussions with the Israeli government.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Faruqi, second supplementary.
Israel is intent on a ground invasion of Rafah. After forcibly displacing Palestinian in Gaza to Rafah, having murdered over 31,000 Palestinians, Israel is now starving children to death, and their genocide is leading to mass hunger and famine. And yet the Labour government continues to support Israel's genocide in Gaza. Minister, when will the Labour government stop supporting and arming Israel?
Thank you, Senator Faruqi. And Minister Farrell, I remind you to address your answers to the chair.
Thank you, President, and thanks, Senator Faruqi, for her second supplementary question. Well, it's as if those terrorists in Hamas in October last year don't exist based on your question, Senator Faruqi. What What you have to understand is that almost 1,300 men, women and children, innocent men, women and children, on the southern border of Israel were massacred in a terrorist assault by Hamas. Now, we took the decision, the government took the decision...
Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. Senator McKenzie, when I call order, it applies to you. Interjections between you and Senator Rice across the chamber are incredibly disorderly. I'm asking all senators not to interject. Minister Farrell.
Thank you. But as I said, it's as if those events did not occur. The Australian government took the correct decision.
Thank you, Minister Farrell. The time for answering has expired. Senator Gosh.
President, this is not my first speech, and my question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Farrell. With reference to the Cabinet's visit to the Northern Territory last week and the government's announcement of a significant package of economic development and cost of living measures, can the Minister update the Senate on the impact of these announcements last week by the government, including housing, education and critical minerals, and how they will benefit all Territorians?
Thank you, Senator Gosh. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Gosh for his question and wish him a very long and successful career in this place. Last week, the entire Albanese Cabinet made a trip to the Northern Territory, with ministers getting onto the ground to hear firsthand from communities, industries and our territory colleagues. During the trip, our government delivered billions of dollars in investment for projects right across the Northern Territory in areas such as education, health and resources. Minister Clare announced, for example, that our government will deliver at least an additional $737.7 million for public schools in the Northern Territory, which, when combined with a further $330 million from the Territory Government, will change lives for kids across the Northern Territory. Minister Burney joined with the Prime Minister to announce a landmark $4 billion investment for remote housing in the Northern Territory to help close the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians and make a major difference to the lives of people living in remote communities. With the 50th anniversary of Cyclone Tracy approaching in December, our government will also invest $600,000 to install monuments to memorialise those whose lives were changed forever during that disaster. I was especially pleased to join my Territory colleague, Minister Joel Bowden, to launch Choose Tourism, a new campaign to attract more workers to the tourism industry and show off the Northern Territory to the world. These investments will deliver serious economic development in the Territory and ensure that they are well placed to thrive into the future.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Gosh, first supplementary.
I thank the Minister for his answer and for highlighting the major investments the government is making in the Territory. Can the Minister also update the Senate on our government's investments in critical minerals and rare earth projects in the Northern Territory and how they will not only support economic development but also increase trade with our key partners?
Thank you, Senator Gosh. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Gosh for his first supplementary question. And yes, I can answer that question, Senator. The Albanese government is committed to supporting our critical minerals sector, which will help Australia become a renewable energy superpower. That's why we announced $840 million in loans and other financial support for Arafura Resources to build the first integrated rare earth mine and processing facility near Alice Springs. This project involves mining, processing and exporting of rare earths to our long-standing trading partners like the Republic of Korea, Germany and the United States for renewable technologies like electric vehicles and wind turbines. Investments in projects like this means more jobs including value-adding jobs for Australian workers in Alice Springs on these projects.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Ghosh, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Can the Minister outline to the Senate why these investments are essential in helping Australia's transition to become a renewable energy superpower?
Thank you, Senator Ghosh. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Ghosh for his second supplementary question. And yes, I can answer that question. Our government wants Australia to seize the economic opportunities of the transition to a renewable, cleaner economy. The critical minerals which will come from this project are essential for the technologies that will power our net zero future, from batteries to electric cars to wind turbines. That is why we have supported the Arafura Rare Earths project to kickstart this industry and put us in pole position to reap the benefits of renewable transition. The race is on to secure global investment for projects to provide trusted, reliable supply of these minerals through diversified supply chains. And our government is committed to help the sector attract this investment so that we can become a renewable energy superpower.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Roberts.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Senator McAllister. The government has ruled out adding nuclear electricity to our energy mix, based on the government's calculations showing a higher cost of nuclear energy as against wind and solar. Minister, can you please inform the Senate of the levelised cost of generation of wind, solar and nuclear that informed the government's position?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. And I'll just remind you, questions need to go to ministers, not assistant ministers. So I believe the responsible minister, I thought you said Senator McAllister. Yes, so I'm directing the question to Senator Minister Gallagher. Thank you, Minister Gallagher.
thank you, Senator. Thank you, President. Thanks. Thank you for the question. The advice the government has, and I think this is understood by everyone who's been following the energy discussion, is that nuclear energy is very slow to build. It's the most expensive form of new electricity generation, cannot firm renewables, which are the cheapest, fastest and cleanest form of new electricity generation. The analysis that has been done showed that there was a significant cost burden. So it is about cost. Our position, we are looking for the cheapest form of energy generation, which is renewables, which includes wind and solar. And Australia obviously has a very significant comparative advantage when it comes to that form of energy with renewables, with our sunlight hitting our more sunlight hitting our landmass than any other country. We also don't have a workforce to support that renewable energy, that nuclear energy generation. So the time it would be involved, it would be decades away before anything became operational, and would do nothing to reduce the energy costs for Australian households and business in the meantime. So our position, and I think there is a lot of support for that position, is that this transition to renewable energy is the quickest and cheapest path as we shift away from fossil fuel generation. That is the path that the government was clear about before the election. That is the path that we're implementing with under Minister Bowen and Mr McAllister's leadership, leading this for the government, and we will continue on that path, and we will leave the nuclear energy debate for those opposite to convince people of.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Roberts, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Minister. Minister, is the figure for nuclear based on real-world data from the 440 nuclear power stations around the world, or even from the last 10 stations completed in the last few years? And if not, on what is it based?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Look, I understand, and I'll see if there's anything I can provide, but the government analysis that looked at the cost of nuclear energy was looking at how to replace the retiring coal-fired power station fleet, and that figure resulted in about a $25,000 cost impost on each Australian taxpayer based off 15.1 million taxpayers. So according to many of the experts in the energy field, it's more expensive, it's going to take decades to build, and in the meantime we'll do nothing to reduce the power costs on households, which are clearly going to benefit from the shift to renewable energy generation and technology, and that is the path the government will continue on, because we're focused on cost of living and a sensible and orderly transition away from fossil fuels and to new forms of energy.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Roberts, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. The government is using a figure for the cost of modular nuclear power that's not based on any real-world data. Rather, it's mere speculation about a type of generation that doesn't exist.
Senator Roberts, please resume your seat. Order on my right. Order. Senator McKim. Senator McKim. Senator Roberts has the right to ask his question in silence. I want to ask senators to respect that right. Senator Roberts.
The government's data is based on speculation about a type of generation that does not exist and completely misrepresents the cost of nuclear power. The government is spreading misinformation again. Minister, why didn't the government use the real-world data from 57 conventional nuclear power stations currently under construction around the world, and why is the government not being honest about nuclear?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. And Minister Gallagher.
Well, I don't accept the question that Senator Roberts just put to me. We are providing information to the community, and that information is that renewables remain the lowest cost new build generation technology. That is clearly a fact. Now, we have also done some analysis, and I think you'll find it hard to find any expert that says nuclear isn't expensive or isn't going to take too long to build, including how you generate a workforce around this and the time it will take to do that, based on the work that we need to happen now. We can't delay this for decades. The transition was already delayed for a decade under those opposite with 22 failed energy policies. In 18 months, we're getting on with it, and we are in that transition, and we will focus on renewables as the lowest cost form of energy generation that will help households with those cost of living pressures.
As Senator Rennick, I called you a number of times and I called the chamber to order. May I invite you to make your contribution at some other time and not question time? Senator Sharma.
Thank you, President, and this is not my first speech. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Home Affairs, Senator Watt. Minister, how many of the more than 2,000 visas granted to Palestinian document holders following the 7th of October have since been cancelled, and how many of those cancelled have now been reinstated?
Thank you, Senator Sharma. Minister Watt.
Thank you for the question, Senator Sharma. I think it might be your first question in this chamber. And the issue that you've asked about is something that I addressed in some media comments this morning as well. The government's practices as to the cancellation of these visas have been on the record. As we have made clear repeatedly, this government is following exactly the same process as the former government in the granting of visas, in the consideration of visa applications, and has applied exactly the same security tests to those applications as has occurred previously, including under the former government. Decisions were made to award visas to some applicants, not all, and those decisions were based on information that was available at the time those decisions were made. Further information in some cases came to light, and on the basis of that information, the security advice was that some visas should be cancelled, and that action was taken. And then, as time progressed, additional information came to light which required the reinstitution, if you like, of some of those visas that had been cancelled. That is ordinary practice for any government of any political persuasion to make visa decisions based on information that is available and that is based on security advice from security agencies. And of course...
Thank you, Senator Watt. Senator Paterson.
Relevant, A point of order on direct relevance, Madam President. Senator Sharma's question was very direct, very factual. It just asked for a series of numbers. The minister's not yet provided them in 1 minute and 30 seconds. If he doesn't have them, he should take them on notice and provide it afterwards.
Thank you, Senator Patterson. I will remind the minister of the question. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President. So as I was saying, the way that the government has approached this issue is exactly the same as was approached under the former government.
Senator Watt, please resume your seat. Senator Patterson.
On direct relevance, the minister's now openly defying your ruling to return to the question.
To be fair, Senator Patterson, the minister had just got to his feet, but he is aware that I have redirected him to the question. Thank you, Senator Patterson. A minister.
Thanks, President. What I was attempting to say was that, of course, the way the government is approaching this is to ensure that the Australian community's safety is foremost in the decision-making process. Now, the opposition has asked about numbers, and what I can say is that when Mr Dutton was the Home Affairs Minister, he granted more than 500 visas each
minister
week to
Watt,
Syrians
minister
fleeing
Watt,
the country in 2015.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator Patterson, I'm suspecting you're jumping on a point of order. Unfortunately, the time has expired. Senator Sharma, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Multiple media outlets last week reported that a number of individuals leaving Gaza had their Australian visas cancelled while en route to Australia. Last night, the ABC reported that some of these decisions are now being reversed, with additional security and other checks conducted by the Home Affairs Department now complete. Minister, what additional checks did the Department of Home Affairs conduct that led to the cancellation and subsequent reinstatement of these visas?
Thank you, Senator Sharma. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President. Thanks, Senator Sharma. Well, Senator Sharma, I would expect that, as an experienced member of parliament and a former diplomat, you would know that governments do not provide that level of detail about security advice that they receive. And simply being a member of the opposition doesn't automatically entitle you to ask those sorts of questions or get that sort of information. You would surely know that governments don't provide that kind of security information. What I can also say is that the Department of Home Affairs routinely cancels visas. That department has done so under this government, they have done so under the former government, they have done so for time immemorial. And that's because all non-citizens who wish to enter or remain in Australia must satisfy the requirements of the Migration Act. And all non-citizens are required to meet health, character and security criteria. They're required to undergo security checks and are subject to ongoing security assessments. That is the gut practice under this government, as it was under the former government.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Sharma, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. On 28th of February, when asked by the opposition to confirm whether adequate security checks were conducted on all of the individuals from Gaza who were granted visas, Minister, you assured us they were and went on to chastise the opposition for attempting to whip up fear. Minister, is it still your evidence that all necessary security checks were conducted on all of the individuals from Gaza before they were granted visas?
Thank you, Senator Sharma. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Senator Sharma. Well, Senator Sharma, I have to say I'm quite disappointed in you because we were led to believe that you were someone, as a former diplomat, who respected diplomatic practices in this country, respected security agencies, but now you're taking your orders from certain other people
as to how these issues should be approached. I'll remind you to direct your answers to the chair.
Thank you, President. As Senator Sharma and the entire opposition well knows, all visa applicants are required to undergo security checks, and this government, just like the former government, has followed the advice of the security agencies in making its decisions. We have followed that advice in deciding, in some cases, to grant visas, in other cases, to refuse applications, in other cases, to cancel visas, and in other cases, to reinstate those visas, as that advice has changed based on the information provided. Now, some members of the opposition might laugh about that, but this government takes the security of the Australian people seriously. It would appear that others don't,
Thank you, Minister. We will continue to do so. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cox.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Leader of the Government, representing the Prime Minister, Minister Farrell. The government's first legislative act of the year has been to silence First Nations voices, breaking an election promise to strengthen the environment laws by allowing gas companies to bypass environment and consultation requirements completely. Last week's rushed half-day hearing into a bill revealed a wide range of stakeholders that had no idea about the bypass provision and called for it to be removed. Yeah. Outside of your gas donors, who did the government consult with specifically regarding Schedule 2, Part 2 of this bill, and specifically which First Nations groups were consulted and over what period of time?
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Cox for her, her question. As I spoke about in an earlier answer, the Cabinet has been to the Northern Territory only last week, and the developments in the Northern Territory is that there will be a supply of gas coming from the Northern Territory to assist particularly the east coast of Australia with guaranteed and reliable gas supplies. So this government doesn't apologise for continuing to support the gas industry and ensure that the lights stay on so that even basket weavers like yourself, Senator Cox, can have light at
night time. Minister Farrell, withdraw that comment.
I withdraw.
Thank you. Please continue. Did you wish to continue, Minister? No, he sat down.
Tell me about it afterwards. So, the long and the short of the answer, Senator Cox, is that we reject your proposition. The review.
Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. Senator McKim.
Thank you. Well, this is an obvious point of order on relevance. President, Senator Cox didn't make a proposition. She asked some questions.
We are two-thirds of the way through, and
Senator Farrell has not even gone
Senator
close
McKim,
to answering
I
the
am
question.
Yet to hear your point of order.
Relevance. He has not been relevant to
you.
The question in
the,
any way.
There was a preamble to the question, and there was a specific reference to Schedule 2 at the end of the Senator Cox's question. I am more than happy to draw that to the Minister's attention, but the Minister has been relevant to the question. Minister.
So a public consultation process was run between the 12th of January and the 8th of March 2024, and there will be, well, this was your question, and I'm answering it directly. There will be future consultations in the first half of the year. All provisions of the bill were outlined in the explanatory memorandum, and that was outlined by Minister King in her second reading speech. The bill is currently subject to...
Thank you, Minister. Time for answering has expired. Senator Cox, first supplementary.
Yeah, as usual, we get no answers. This is the second piece of legislation in 8 months that the Albanese government has introduced to financially benefit gas corporations. In previous question time, Senator Wong admitted that the sea dumping bill was for Santos. Yeah. So will you be equally forthcoming and advise the Senate that this Schedule 2, Part 2, is fulfilling Santos's requests to the Minister for Resources?
That's right.
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Cox for her first supplementary question. Senator Cox, the reality is that this government, the Albanese Labor government, is moving towards net zero. We have a policy of achieving net zero by 2050, but there's a long time between right now and getting to that point in time, and one of the things that's absolutely vital is that we keep the lights on, that we keep industry going, and we keep people in jobs until we can make that transition. Now, I talked in one of my earlier questions about the fact that we are supporting the development of the extraction, the processing of rare earths and critical minerals in the Northern Territory. We're doing that because the long-term future...
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cox, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Why is this government, who claimed they wanted a voice to this parliament, that they are now actively silencing the voices of First Nations people fighting to protect their sea country from the climate and environment trashing gas cartel?
Yeah. Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President. Well, I've just explained to you the consultation process that has gone on, and we continue to have discussions about this. But the reality, Senator Cox, and it beggars belief that the Greens can't understand that you can't turn a switch, turn gas off, and turn renewable energy on. You cannot do that. It's impossible to do it. So in the meantime,
Minister Farrell, please resume your seat. When there's silence in the chamber, I'll address Senator Cox. Senator Cox.
Thank you, President. Point of order on relevance. I asked why this government, who said they wanted a voice to parliament, are now denying First Nations people who want to oppose these gas projects on their own country and in sea country, why this government is doing that actively.
I believe the minister's being relevant. I'll continue to listen carefully. Minister Farrell.
The reality, Senator Cox, is that we're not going to get to net zero overnight. There's got to be a transition. There's a transition from where we are
Order.
At the moment. We're engaging. I mean, this is a government that supported a voice to Parliament for Indigenous Australians. In my home state of South Australia this weekend,
Thank you, Minister Farrell. The time for answering has expired. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister for Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, Minister Watt. Over the last few months, the spotlight has been shone on our supermarkets, with countless reports of complaints about pricing practices. Speaking to the ABC, Jennifer Doki from Western New South Wales said, "Our fridges are bare because we can't afford fresh fruit and veggies. Before, you could fill the trolley with all the food you want, but we just can't afford to buy it now." New South Wales farmers have said farmers find themselves at a loss to explain the growing gap between farm gate and retail and ordinary Australians who are copping it. So, with reference to concerns about the different price farmers have paid for their produce with what Aussies are being charged at the checkout, what is the Albanese government doing to address these discrepancies?
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Pratt, for I think a really important question going to the point about cost of living pressures that Australians are experiencing. The Albanese government certainly understands that Australians are under the pump, and as a government, we are doing everything we can to address it. That's why we're delivering billions of dollars in cost of living relief on things like energy bills, medicines, cheaper childcare, and of course, Labor's tax cuts from the 1st of July. But we also recognise that competition can play an important part in easing the pressure on households and businesses. After a wasted coalition decade, Labor is getting on with the job of making the Australian economy more competitive and fairer for producers and consumers. We've increased the penalty for anti-competitive conduct and banned unfair contract terms. Last year, we reviewed the Food and Grocery Code of Conduct's dispute resolution provisions, and this year we've asked Dr. Crabe Emerson to review the code itself. Dr. Emerson's review is looking at the relationship between farm gate and retail prices and whether or not there can be more transparency in the food supply chain. The code was originally put in place to address the imbalance of market power between supermarkets and their suppliers, especially smaller producers and farmers. But many farmers have certainly spoken to me about how hard they find it to deal with the supermarket chains and the lack of transparency that exists in those negotiations. This review of the code marks an important step towards understanding how our supermarket sector is working to deliver fair prices for everyday Australians and for our hard-working farmers. As part of the review, I convened two roundtables, one with primary producer groups and another with processor groups and unions, so that they could have the opportunity to put directly to Dr. Emerson their views about how the agriculture sector should be operating. We've also initiated an ACCC inquiry into supermarket prices and commissioned consumer group choice to provide quarterly
price
reporting.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Pratt, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. In evidence of which you're aware given during the public hearings of the Senate Select Committee on supermarket prices. We've heard stories, as you know, from farmers going out of business as a result of poor conduct by supermarkets. Given the cost of living pressures that are impacting families across the nation, including our farming families, what is the government doing to help relieve cost of living pressures for our farmers and our regional communities?
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President, and thanks, Senator Pratt, for your participation in that Senate Select Committee, along with a number of other senators in this chamber. I think it's revealing some very important information about what is actually going on between supermarkets and farmers and has been hidden for too long. We know that Australians are under cost of living pressure, and that's why every Australian taxpayer will get a tax cut from the 1st of July. And most people will get a bigger tax cut to help with these cost of living pressures. Importantly, more than 90% of people working in the agriculture, fisheries or forestry sectors will receive a tax cut. Even though inflation is coming down in welcome and encouraging ways, even though we've got wages growth, which is a good thing as well, we know that people are still under the pump. That's why these tax cuts are so important, and it's why the Treasurer has said that if we can do more in the May budget, we will. We're also rolling out cheaper medicines, opposed by the Coalition, delivering more affordable housing for the bush, opposed by the Coalition. We've had electricity bill rebates, opposed by the Coalition, and we're doing a lot more.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Pratt, second supplementary.
Thank you. It is clear that cost of living pressures are front of mind for Australian families. So why is it important that providing cost of living relief is prioritised across the parliament?
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Minister Watt.
Thanks, Senator Pratt. We've said all along that what we want is a fair deal for families and a fair go for farmers. And while we've had a laser-like focus on cost of living in this government, what have the Liberal and National parties focused on? Firstly, rolling out the most expensive energy policy in the history of our country, which would put experimental nuclear reactors in cyclone-prone areas, driving power prices up. Secondly, they're too busy promoting Putin-backing extremists who say that gender is a grievance narrative to the top of their Senate tickets. And of course, they're not coming clean on whether they'll keep Labor's tax cuts if they ever were elected. But they're not alone in being distracted or divisive. The Greens political party, whose housing spokesperson told the ABC's Insiders program that we have enough homes in this country, tell that to those living in West End. Intense.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator McKim, there is no need to shout out. I will, if I don't see you standing, the clerk will draw my attention to you. Senator McKim.
Well, thank you, President. The point of order is that the minister is reflecting on a member of the other place, and in fact, he's reflecting by lying about what he says.
Senator McKim, that is not a point of order, and I would ask you to withdraw the comment you made.
I do withdraw. He is misleading the chamber, and it is a point of order.
Senator McKim, I did not invite you to debate the issue. I will ask you once again, order Senator Watt to simply withdraw. You need to stand and do that.
I withdraw.
Thank you. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. So the Greens are sensitive about the fact that they continue to delay Labor's important housing initiatives. They demand and protest about needing more housing and then getting the—
Thank you, Minister. Time for answering has expired. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Farrell. Media outlets have reported that at a secret media briefing held last Friday, the Minister for Home Affairs said that the High Court had drawn new boundaries around the powers of the executive and the parliament, and there continues to be uncertainty about exactly where those boundaries will ultimately be drawn when it comes to key aspects of migration law. Minister, has the government lost control of the immigration system?
Yes. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Hughes for her question. No.
Senator Hughes. First supplementary.
Has the government received advice that more than 100 additional offenders will need to be released onto our streets in the coming months?
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Hughes for her first supplementary question. Well, as you know, historically this area of policy has been a bipartisan approach, both the government and the opposition have supported the policies that this government, in particular Minister Clare O'Neill and Minister Giles, have been.
Senator Farrell, please resume your seat. I'm not going to call you Senator Hughes until there's silence in the chamber. I'm not sure how long you want to hold up, Senator Hughes, Senator Mackenzie. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam President. On relevance, it was a very specific and narrow question with regards to advice around 100 additional offenders being released, if you could draw the minister to the question.
Well, the question itself is not narrow, and I believe that the minister is responding to your question, Minister Farrell.
President, this area of public policy has generally been a bipartisan one. Of course, we've recently had a decision of the High Court that's made certain determinations that as a government, we are obliged to follow, and we are addressing those decisions of the High Court
Thank you, Minister.
To ensure
the time for answering has expired. Senator Hughes, second supplementary.
Take that as almost a yes. What assurances can the minister provide us that the government will not release any more dangerous individuals into the Australian community due to its inaction on immigration detention?
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Minister Farrell.
Thank you, President, and thank Senator Hughes for her second supplementary question. What I can assure you of, Senator Hughes, is that we've got two terrific ministers in this space. Minister O'Neill and Minister Giles, who are working through in the national interest to ensure ordinary Australians are protected, and that we can find a way through these High Court decisions, and they will continue to do that. And on that note, can I ask that any further questions be put on the notice paper?